Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight we have special guests, Victory Ledgerwood, also known as CeCe LaRock, and R&B sensation Yvette Michelle calling in. Tonight's subjects will focus on Black History Month, and our hot topic of the day is, are you single? Alone on Valentine's Day? Are your standards too high? Do you enjoy being single? Call in the show and speak about it. 347-989-0761. I'd like to focus on the African burial ground that's located at the Federal Office Building, which is located at 290 Broadway, New York City. Made of concrete, granite, stainless steel, fiber optics, electronics, 32 feet by 6 inches high, 16 feet wide, 30 inches deep, stands American Song, which is a sculpt made by Clyde Lenz. Now, the construction of the Federal Office Building became the focus of much attention when it was discovered that it was being built on a section of an African burial ground dating from colonial times. American Song pays homage to the people who were buried there while making a universal statement about freedom. Now, as many of you know, archaeologists have been discovering fossils that go back thousands, millions of years that prove that Africans were on this continent way before Columbus. But recently, a slave graveyard was found on St. Helena, probably the largest ever slave graveyard containing the mortal remains of some 10,000 young Africans, has been found on the mid-Atlantic island of St. Helena. Many of the bodies were those of children who died between 1840 and 1874. A team of British archaeologists found the graves in 2008 during preparation to build a new airport on this isolated British territory. Ironically, most of the victims of the 19th century slave trade had been taken there not by slave traders, but by British Royal Navy patrols hunting slavers following the abolition of slavery in Britain in 1807. The captured ships were taken to the island after the slavers were arrested and the young African slaves liberated. For many, freedom came too late. Many were already dead as a result of the inhumane conditions they had been exposed to, packed together in the fetid holds of the ships, enduring heat, hunger, and thirst. And many died soon after their arrival at Rupert Valley near the capital at Jamestown, St. Helena. famous as the island where Napoleon was exiled and later died. He was subsequently reburied in France, though. But it was the headquarters of the Royal Navy's West Africa Squadron. Now, tragically, smallpox, dysentery, and other communicable diseases killed many of the liberated slaves who were already weak from their ordeal. Most had been en route to Cuba, Brazil, the United States, and other parts of the New World from slave depots in Africa before being rescued by the Royal Navy. An observer, from 1861 described the dreadful conditions he found on a slave ship that had just landed. The whole deck, as he picked his way from end to end in order to avoid treading on them, was thickly strewn with the dead, dying and starved bodies of what seemed to be species of ape that he had never seen before. Yet these miserable, helpless objects being picked up from the deck and handed over the ship's side, one by one, living, dying, and dead alike, were really human beings. Their arms were worn down to about the size of a walking stick. Many died as they were passed from the ship to the boat, but there was no time to separate the living from the dead. When you think about Black history across America, when you think about all that has been accomplished, remember those that are no longer here to speak for themselves and to speak of their elders. We have a caller. Welcome to Hear No Evil.
Hey, Darlene, how you doing? It's Victory, formerly known as Cece LaRock from
Victory.
Sugar Hill, girl. What's going on?
Finally, I got you on the radio. How are you, Victory?
I'm doing wonderful, sister. Really blessed. How you been?
I am so glad to hear from you. I got all of your information, and I was so happy that you were able to call. I did some research on you, and I found that you had a modeling background, and you were also in the magazine that I also was in, Class Magazine.
What? We have so much in common.
Wait a minute. Did you know Solomon Zule?
Solomon, that name is not ringing a bell right
because
now.
He was the fashion editor of Class Magazine, and actually he's the reason, he is how I started modeling back in like in 83, way back when.
Right.
So reading your bio, I was like, okay, you worked on the film Strictly Business, Who's the Man? You've done a lot of work.
Yeah, I've been pretty busy back in the days, and I'm trying to stay busy now, you know, being productive and everything.
And I see you, did you work with Ernie Washington?
Ernie Washington, this is pertaining to...
Modeling. Because I saw something here that said 57th Street International Fashion Show, and I know he was involved with that as well. So it's just amazing. And then you did Black Hair Today magazine. I mean, you've just been all over. But you're a rapper and a songstress. So, like, where do you find your time and your energy? And how did you first get into the business? Let's start from the beginning.
Wow. You know, Darlene, I go way, way, way back on Sugar Hill Records back in the early 80s. The group Miracle Mike and the Ladies of the 80s were formed, and we did a little bit of shopping, and we ended up on Sugar Hill Records recording a track called Out of Control, which is on the 5-CD Sugar Hill Record Story box set.
Wow.
We started there on Sugar Hill Records, and then we got a little taste of stardom. You know, we didn't blow up like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five and the Treacherous Three, you know, but we got a little bit of taste of stardom back then. And then after that was said and done, I started doing a little bit of club work, you know, doing R&B music, opening up people like Colonel Abram, doing R&B stuff, and a diva. She did the house version of Respect.
Okay, I remember I had her one of my shows before back in the day when I had my on Broadway show. And Colonel Abram, so you have a house background, R&B back, hip hop background, yes. Now a gospel or inspirational music background.
Yeah, the call on my life is inspirational music, most definitely bringing you up to speed. I'm writing and composing inspirational music as we speak. So that's really my love, that's my passion, and that's my calling, and that's what I'm going to settle in and just do this thing, you know. Songs like I Believe I Can Fly and Sounds of Blackness, you know, stuff that encourages the spirit, you know what I'm saying?
Now, what led you to that path?
Inspirational music?
Yeah.
Wow. A few years back, I just knew that I needed to make some serious changes in my life because of the way I was living, you know. Mm-hmm. I was on the wild track. I'll admit it. I was really, really on the wild track. And I knew deep down in my heart if I was to continue on this wild track that I wasn't going to make heaven.
Wow.
And I wasn't going to try to deceive myself, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I made peace with the Lord. And when I made peace with the Lord, he healed me completely, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then after that, that's when the songs started coming.
Now, isn't it wonderful how, you know, like, it's amazing because there's a lot of hip-hop recording artists that say the same things. And,
yes.
And those of you that are true to
yes.
that calling profess that your lifestyle had to change, you know, even though you're the same individual, it's just that you've lived, you've been able to overcome adversity.
Yes.
And you
with his help, yes.
second chance.
Definitely.
to do something different, because I notice a lot of artists like Salt from Salt and Pepper.
Yeah, that's my girl, yeah.
Mace, Curtis Blow.
Yes, Kurt,
Ron
yeah.
from Run DMC. And, you know, believe it or not, DMX wants to do a gospel record.
Oh, that is fantastic. I would love to do some background for him.
He needs to really, really be given a platform. Because if you listen to many of his songs,
mm-hmm.
he's reaching, he's calling out. He's
beautiful.
Calling out. And he's really, really testifying. But because he has to fit into what the modern music and the commercial music calls for,
yes.
the lyrics are changed. But if you replace some of those evil, negative words with God and spiritual type words, you will see that he's basically doing the same exact thing.
Interesting.
I read something somewhere that he was trying to do that. So I wish him a lot of luck with that.
Most
and,
definitely.
Now, I see that you also did some radio work.
You're listening to 91.5 FM, Youth in Progress, WNYE. Yes, ma'am. I had a good time with that, too. I'm a multi-talent, darling.
When's your birthday?
9/22.
Oh, my God, a Libra Virgo.
Look
yeah,
out.
You can do it all. My twin's father was born on that day.
What?
Wow.
Interesting.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah, so that's good because that means that you are grounded and you have balance.
Got to have that balance, honey.
So what led you to being on the radio?
How did that happen? I ran into the host of the show, whose name is George Brash, and he said to me he was looking for a co-hostess.
Mm-hmm.
I said, well, I've never done radio professionally, but, you know, I was a rapper on Sugar Hill Records, and I think I could help you out a little bit,
right.
you know, due to the fact I have this type of personality, and I love people. Black, white, blue, and green, you know.
Right.
Maybe I can help you out. And he said, you know, I like your voice. He said, I like your voice, and I want you to come down and give it a shot. And I said, okay, Youth in Progress. I'm about seeing youth progress. Let's give it a shot. And, girl, let me tell you, I stayed with him for almost 2 years.
Really?
Yes, reporting nothing but good news and the weather. That was
okay.
my function. Nothing but good news for the kids, and I did the weather to keep you warm.
Wow. So you ever thought about going back into radio and giving it another shot?
down the road, what my heart is set on doing inspirational music now.
Mm-hmm.
But down the road, I would love to do radio again. Yes.
And
I'm really on the camera, darling. I'm really on camera. That's me, not behind the scenes.
Oh, okay.
You
so
see what I'm saying?
You'd rather be in the front.
Yeah, I'm center stage.
See, now that's funny that you say that because I've been in front of the camera and behind the scene, and I prefer
right.
being behind the scenes. Like, I always wanted to do radio, but because of time constraints and just a whole lot of other lifestyles, I wasn't able to do
yeah.
it, and then Blog Talk Radio came along. And now with the TV show that I have so many programs that we've already taped. I never have to go to the TV studio again.
That is fantastic.
You've been showing reruns because a lot of times people don't even watch. People, you know, have not seen some of the programs that have aired.
Okay.
So, you know, it's easy for me to just show reruns. And but so many people enjoy being in front of the camera. I never, between you and I never really enjoyed being in front of the camera for some reason.
So let's go back to Goldie's Hot Wraps. I did
for
a season. You
Wait
did
a minute.
It for a season?
I was, let me tell you, first of all, I wasn't even going to do Goldie's Hot Wraps, which is a public access program that was produced by Oliver Richardson. You know he does.
Exactly, right.
Now, I used to cast for that show. Actually, that's how I met Oliver Richardson, because he and I worked at Paragon Cable, which was the first name before it was Time Warner. It was called Paragon Cable.
That's right.
And I met him in a booth. Like, he sat in the booth next to me.
Mm-hmm.
And he heard me change the script because we were selling cable.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he heard me change the script and asked, was I an actress? And I said, no, but I can write a script. And he told me he had a television program. And at the time, I was in BMCC, you know, and
yes.
I didn't know anything about TV. I mean, I mean, this was like way before I got my degree in film and video. And he told me that he needed artists, and he knew that I knew some rappers. So I started booking people on the show. And then Strafe, remember he did Set It Off?
Yes.
He was producing me and Peaches, also known as Edith Lawson. And
yes.
Oliver found out that I could sing. And he was like, well, wait a minute. I thought you worked for Department of Environment Protection. You was only here, you know. And I was like, well, you know, I'm really a writer, you know, but, you know, I've been forced to sing. So
mm-hmm.
he was like, you know, well, why don't you come on the show? And I was like, be in front of the camera? I was like, oh, no, because I was so nervous.
Oh, no.
And,
I love it.
And then when we did Goldie's Hot Rap, oh, and I loved her so much. She was, God, you know, peace be upon her.
Yes.
That was such a nice, she was such a, she was a gem. I mean.
His daughter, yeah.
I mean, I could not believe when she passed, you know. From
yes.
But I met some really nice people. I never knew what happened to Robert James. I know he was one of the producers of that program as well.
Mm-hmm.
But how did you wind up on Goldie's Hot Wraps?
Well, the producer, Oliver Richardson, also had a real estate company on White Plains Road in the Bronx, where I'm from. That's my hood, the boogie down Bronx.
Okay.
And my aunt worked as the secretary of that real estate firm. And through my aunt, I met Oliver Richardson. And then one thing led to the next thing. And before you know it, I was co-hosting with Danielle.
Right, right. Wow.
Under the name of MC Genuine. And then the first time I met you was at Pepper's party.
Wait, which Pepper? From Salt and Pepper?
Exactly, exactly.
Do you remember that party?
I do. Certain things, I'm gonna keep it real. Certain things I remember very clearly. We're going back past over 20 years ago.
Yes.
Certain things I remember very, very clearly, and then other things is kind of vague, you know?
Wow, so you actually remember meeting me?
Yes, it was wonderful meeting you. You are absolutely beautiful.
Oh, thank you. You too. I mean, come on now.
Thank you.
Wow, but isn't that funny how we were on the same program,
yes,
in the same party, and
yes,
in the same magazine?
It's not a coincidence. Everything happens for a reason.
This is crazy. We were supposed to meet, I think we were supposed to meet when we met, but I guess we both went our different routes and,
yes,
and you know. But what does the future hold for you?
Well, Lord permitting, this spring, this summer, I would like to release some beautiful, beautiful, inspirational music that's going to edify and encourage folks.
Mm-hmm.
And I just want to be a blessing and fulfill my calling. You know what I mean? So I want to release inspirational music this spring or this summer. That's my number one top priority. Also, I'm down with a company called 3030.
Uh-huh.
And they put out a majority of the TV commercials that you see on television.
Mm-hmm.
And because I'm a singer-rapper, I am a member of 3030. So they send me some hot slamming music and,
mm-hmm,
and pictured, you know, TV commercial type stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And they ask me to write rap or write lyrics to the picture.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
I recently did that. You didn't get that Adidas track?
We will be playing that. We will be playing
that. Oh, get down.
Hold on 1 second. I think we have another caller.
Okay, darling.
Welcome to Hear No Evil.
Hi, this is Yvette Michelle. How are you?
Well, unbelievable. This is the lovely Yvette Michelle, R&B sensation. Welcome to Hear No Evil. You are on live with me and former Sugar Hill recording artist Victory, also known as CC LaRock.
Welcome,
oh my
welcome,
goodness.
Welcome.
This is an honor.
Welcome, dear. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the opportunity to join you.
Well, we were here talking about some projects that Victory has been working on. And actually, I want to take a moment and play one of her commercials. And we'll
okay.
be right back, okay? Enjoy.
Right.
Dipping, but not pimping. To the beat, see what we wear. Night and day look hard, yet stare. It's all good, we feel good. Hand clapping, chilling in the hood. My boy is nice. Feel the move, it's rapid pacing. Earth shaking. Make no mistake, and we can't be taken.
Ah, Adidas.
Ah, yeah. Make no mistake, we can't be taken, yo.
How did you get involved with this commercial?
Well, like I said, I'm a member of 3030, and I went to a seminar in Manhattan with the company Volition Brand Sounding. They were doing a seminar on TV commercials and how to break in and teaching you the ropes, the ins, the outs, the payments, this and that. And I said, I know in my heart as a singer-rapper, I know this is something that I could do. Even though I prefer to be on camera, this is more like a behind-the-scenes thing. But I said, let me give this a shot.
Right.
So I got down, became a member with 3030, and like I said, they recently sent me that music, and this was like teenage boys on the corner of Brooklyn dancing with
mm-hmm.
all these Adidas, the Adidas sneakers, the Adidas outfits, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
So I said, wow, they're getting down, they're getting busy. So I said, skipping, dipping, but not pimping, to the beat, see what we wear, night and day, look hard, yes, yeah, stare, it's all good, we feel good, hand clapping, chilling in the hood. That's what came to me, and lo and behold, Darlene, I came in second place. I almost
wow.
got that commercial.
That's okay. You came in
yeah.
second. But at least
yeah.
you got an opportunity to have it played, and you never
Thank
know.
You. He said they're going to try to bring it back, Adidas for Girls. He said to me, Victory is not over. They decided at the last minute that they wanted to use a male voice.
Yeah, well, you know.
The last minute.
It's always happened. So, ladies, what do you have in store for Black History Month?
Well, basically, I am trying to do as much as I can locally and abroad. I've been traveling quite a bit recently, and trying to record an album, so I'm trying to get my bearings, but I do a lot of volunteer work. I contribute in my local community. I definitely take the responsibility of educating those closest to me about what I know about Black history, and just doing my own research, you know, making sure that I'm aware and cognizant of the accomplishments that we've made, and I try to carry the torch.
Yes.
Commercially, I haven't done anything in the last 2 years for Black History Month, but this month I'm planning to change that.
Oh, and that was Yvette Michelle?
Yes, that was Yvette Michelle.
And
yes.
What do you have coming up?
Well, I'm sorry. Go ahead, dear. No, go ahead. Go ahead, honey. I've been talking my mouth off. Go ahead.
It's okay. I wasn't sure whose turn it was.
Okay.
You know, the one thing about Hear No Evil is that we're not like The View. We don't jump all over each other. And it's very good that you ladies have given each other a breath of fresh air, because you both are some dynamite women who have a lot of energy. You're very beautiful, and you're dealing in a man-ruled business. And trying to keep the focus and trying to keep your dignity and your morals in a business that is really, 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 really dirty. You know what I mean?
Yes.
So all of the forums that you are able to do and speak on, take advantage of it. I want to take the time and play one of Yvette Michelle's hits, and it's called I'm Not Feeling You. I'll be right back.
All right.
Okay. All right.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm all right. How you feeling? Come inside. Yeah, come in. Close the door behind you. Yeah, I know. I'm home a little early from work today. Yeah. You miss me, baby? Yeah. I miss you, too. I miss you so much I followed you today. Uh-huh. Yo, son, don't raise up, son. Chill. Sit down, son, I'm talking to you. But I'm saying though, don't deny it. I saw you with your alcoholic secretary, the one with the bad feet, walking, holding her hand, playing yourself as usual. And you know you are known for playing yourself. Instead of holding her hand, you should have been putting some lotion on them crusty feet she got. But anyway, I ain't gonna stress that. It's all good. You know your man, Big Mike? Yeah, the first round draft pick, Big Mike. I know you know him as Mike, but I call him Big Mike. Yeah, why you got your mouth open, boo? Close your mouth. Cause see, he's feeling me, and I am not feeling you.
Wait a minute.
That was my helmet.
That is so funny. You both have a hip hop background, but I noticed that Yvette is more R&B, and I noticed that your first certified gold record came from working with Funkmaster Flex. Was that correct?
Both of them, actually. You know, I was heavily into hip-hop, as you said, but I'm a singer by nature. So he was producing the first commercially released mixtape, and at that time, mixtapes were doing more than normal records in the store. And so it was really big and exciting because it was my way to represent my love for the hip-hop arts. And he and I went to school together. We worked together on the songs and put the record out, and it was a hit. I mean, it surprised me. And that one was Every Day and Every Night, and that was his first one. And what you just played appeared on his second mixtape, because after the success of the first, he immediately wanted to have a follow-up.
Wow.
But he is the one who I do credit for bringing me to the world's attention. I mean, the songs crossed over. I was able to see that I had mass appeal at the time. I was unaware totally that I even had the ability to cross over into pop. So it was just a great, great experience for me.
Wow. So from touring, of course you've toured, what was your experience like traveling and doing your song all over when you realized that it crossed over?
It was very, very humbling. I had severe stage fright. So things kind of happened a lot faster than my mind was ready for them to occur. So I learned on the fly, and like I said, we did the second album really close to the completion of the first album, and I was promoting the songs, creating new music in the studio. It was very rigorous. I lost a lot of weight. I looked good, but I was hungry.
You know, a lot of artists say that they become dehydrated or they lose weight when they're traveling or when they're their first time out. It's probably from stress and nerves.
It was a lot of that combined, but the good part was that I got a chance to see the world. I had a chance to appreciate America. From traveling, I realized what we had, you know, and how I need to just appreciate that. I wouldn't live anywhere else. And it also means that people are people, you know, no matter where you live, we are all genetically wired the same way. We love, we hurt, we like music. You know, it just gave me a different appreciation for the power of the arts. So I really don't have any regrets. I don't have any regrets at all.
Now, Victory?
Yes, I wanted to say the song is really, really hot.
I heard you gasping over there. You know what
this is nice.
It reminded me of Juice's record when he the song he did. Is that
yes,
where you got the idea from?
Was the idea exactly?
At the end, talking about the guy that you followed.
Yes, I was trying to be funny. I was telling y'all that's my version of women's empowerment.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So Because I remember Juice did something like that, and I said, oh, my God, is she getting ready to flip on this dude? And sure enough.
Yes, it was really, it was modeled after that. I enjoyed that song by him so much, and I definitely let him know. We actually met as a result of I'm Not Feeling You, and I credit him for giving me the inspiration.
Wow.
Totally.
Now you were born in the Bronx, right? Is that right, Michelle?
I'm from the Bronx, Yankee
from
Stadium.
The Pride.
Because I live in the Bronx, and it seems like a lot of talented females come from the Bronx. I mean, what is it? Is it the inspiration of the hip-hop artists that have made it, or is it just something about living in New York? What do you guys think?
Bronx has all the things that Manhattan has in terms of what you get being a New Yorker, but the Bronx has I wouldn't say a slower pace, but it's more family and community oriented. So you kind of grow up knowing, I don't know, you have time to smell the roses, for lack of a better term. It's not like growing up to me. What do you think, Victory?
Yeah, I agree totally. The Bronx is kind of laid back. It has what Manhattan has, but it's a little different flavor. And all I can say is it's all good. It's just a blessing, you know.
Now, I noticed that you ladies are in the entertainment field, and how has your personal lives been affected? Are you both single?
Yes,
I am
currently.
Oh, wow. You know, because one of our hot topics tonight, Yvette, is why are you single? And you know, if you want to give your opinion, but why do you think there's so many successful, aggressive women in the business world, the entertainment world, that are single right about now?
You know, I hate to bash my people. But a lot of my brothers...
It doesn't have to be your people, because it's not just your people or women. It's across the board. This is true.
I think it's an intimidation factor. I see a red flag in the black community. That's what I meant. You know, there's definitely more of an instance or occurrence with black men not really being able to stand toe-to-toe with black women in terms of the achievements and the things that they've done to progress in life.
Yeah.
But you're right, it's a problem in general. And I believe it just has to do with the fact that women are, they have more to drive them, or they just intimidate men when they're not needy, you know.
Mm,
I find
yeah.
that, you know, they get the women who get the best treatment are the ones that act the most weak. And I can't do that. I'm a parent. You know what I mean? I don't have time to turn that off. So it's just one of those things.
So you feel that it has a lot to do with men not feeling like they are the head of the household and being intimidated by a woman that is independent?
I think that has that's a major contributing factor. I think that's a major contributing
factor.
I think you can't generalize something like that and stick it into a category, but that seems to be the overriding theme.
Because I find, like, when I look at people like relatives that have been married for, like, decades, and they work side by side, you know, everything's 50-50, but you never really know what goes on behind closed doors. You never know what type of compromise or sacrifices people have made. But I find that because opportunities have increased more for women and than for men, and I think, like you said, men may be a little intimidated. Now,
right.
You also said that girls that are treated better when they're needy,
I think that, you know, I think that a lot of women play dumb. I've seen instances where women play coy to give their man the floor, in a sense, when she knows she has the answer, or she knows that she knows what the right thing to do is, and that kind of plays up to the person's ego. It's the same reason. I think that men are, like you said, more opportunities are presented for women. Women have a different position in life today in this generation. They are somewhat equal in terms of their abilities, and men just don't really respond well to that. I find that the relationships that last are with those who, you know, have other qualities, but what I see mostly is that the wife or the woman just takes the back seat.
So now, because we have a president in office with a very strong wife, so what do you think their methods were? I mean, because in the beginning she was like the breadwinner and she was the one that that was really his backbone. So he didn't seem to be too intimidated by her. He actually used her to his advantage. Do you think that would be the smart route to do, is for men to decide to partner up with their woman so that two minds could work together as one?
Well, I think Michelle Obama and Barack Obama are an exception. And then you've got a different dynamic because they're African-American. I guess I'm coming from the perspective of an African-American woman with these questions and answers more than anything else. It's hard for me to generalize and think about women in general because, honestly, in my time, I just see that we have a problem with maintaining our relationships. White people, Asians, other countries, they seem to value the family tradition a little more than African Americans and some other nationalities that I've been, you know, exposed to. I think and Barack Obama are an exception. Unfortunately, they're an anomaly in some cases. In terms of the grand scheme of things, if you want to do apples to apple, in the black community. So it's really not one answer that I can give, but I know that I moved from the north to the south. My original example is what I see more of now, you know, in terms of the submissiveness, the playing, you know, the second base instead of playing the background instead of being a helpmeet or a partner in the true sense that Michelle is to Obama. And I didn't notice that when I lived in New York. So that's also another influence. You know, a lot of the things that I've been exposed to have to do with geography and, you know, who I'm around. So just really can't give one answer.
Victory, what's your opinion on this subject? Because you've been very quiet.
Yeah, I've been listening. Well, I've been listening and learning a lot. That's for one thing. And I guess my opinion is very, very, I'm really in agreement with what our sister is saying. I come across men that are a little intimidated by me being ambitious, you know, by me being driven and determined to succeed, you know. So I see a little bit of intimidation. I have witnessed some feeling that they're unable to provide, you know, just low self-esteem amongst our people. And I think it's a small, unfortunately, I hate to say this, but it looks like it's a small percentage that really has it together. You know what I mean? And I am very, 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 very selective. So, you know, patience is a virtue with this, you know?
Now, you know, I've also spoken to women that are not just African American on this subject. And a lot of times African-American women tend to place material success as the platform to stand on for a good man. You know what I mean? Like, in other words,
yes.
Sometimes you have to not always use the financial means as your bar of a good man. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, I do, yes.
And a lot of women's standards are low, so therefore you may find, like, the most lowest type of guy with the flyest girl, but it must be, it's always something about that guy that the female, you know, it's an attribute. So there, and I'm going to tell you something, like, a lot of Hispanic women play that domestic needy role when it comes to their men, and a lot of them are raised like that, and because they are natured and nurtured in the church, and I think the spiritual and the religious aspect of our people has been contradicted so much where the morals have been taken out of the home. The family structure has broken up. You never know, the war, the drug epidemic, prison life, slavery. Some people still have that slave mentality.
Yep.
And but when you take it back even further, traditionally, Africans in this country, African Americans, I must say, in this country, because I have an African background and a Hispanic background, so it's really hard for me to weigh in on the pros and the cons because I've seen both sides. But
right.
I know that in the African culture, in certain cultures, men have more than one wife, and it's not always about sex.
Sure.
And it's normally about how well they can afford to take care of people. But in this country, we live under Western society where we're raised to believe that the men are supposed to just be with one person, which is the norm for us. But they sneak around, and a lot of women are dealing with the fact that they're sharing their men. So my thing is that if we know, and most men, if you look at even the college levels, like women are going to college and more than, and there's a statistics out here that's showing that more African-American women are attending colleges and taking advantage of college. But I just realized and just discovered that a lot of men have to join selective service in order to get financial aid. That to me will make a man decide not to go to college right then and there, because they're assuming that they may get drafted.
Exactly.
You know, so there's a lot of pitfalls that have been placed, you know, with men of color in this country to feel like men. And see, if they're raised to think that they have to have money, because in my family, my grandfather said that a good man takes care of his children's children. So that type of mentality does not exist always. But we were raised in my family that we had to seek the man that was the provider, but at the same time, we had to have our education in the event that he worked so hard and died. We had to have something of our own to fall back on. So that's how I was raised. So anytime a man came into my life, I had to bring him to my grandmother, my father, my brothers.
That's right. That's right.
You know what I mean? So everybody had to approve this. But that doesn't happen. Like a lot of my female friends that I grew up with that was in the music industry or fashion world, they were raised by single women. And their whole attitude towards men was very disrespectful. And a lot of times men, you know, don't want to tolerate women that have that disrespectful type of vernacular when they're dealing with them, especially because they're used to being so independent. Sometimes they don't know how to fall back to just compromise and, like Yvette said, you know, make them, like, stroke the ego in a way. You know what I mean? It's like we seem to always have to do that. And it bothers me now when I see so many men that are now finally making the money, these athletes, these business people, these sports figures, and then they run to the clearest person they can get. And I'm like, hold up, wait a minute. Wait a minute. What happened to the women that look like your mother, your sister?
Exactly.
Like, what is going on with our people? It's just, that's why I'm saying, why are we single? Like, why are so many beautiful, intelligent, smart, active women single? That is, to me, is a conspiracy.
So
I think it's a conspiracy.
Think so too.
I never looked at it like that.
To be bitter about it. I actually had a conversation with someone not too long ago, one of those men ain't no good type conversations, and she said, well, maybe you need to get you one for each thing you like in a person. I said, well, listen to you. You know, that's not the, you know, she's like, well, you can't expect one person to have it all. You know, if you want somebody to take you out to dinner, you get somebody for that. If you want, and I, we are conforming to the conspiracy as opposed to trying to fix the root of the issue. I agree that we have strong personalities. And when I traveled to South Africa, performed, I realized that that is inherent. We don't have any control over that. Those women over there have been raised in a different culture, but they act just like us, you know, and I know slavery has a lot to do with it. I know being abandoned and having to raise children and trauma and all the kinds of things that we've had to go through as African Americans have contributed to this. And I allow for that. I compensate for that. And I even tried to deal with somebody who, I, like you said, didn't have the same financial status with, you know, looking at their core values and their character.
Yeah.
But it turned into resentment if you continue. It turned into resentment in my case. You know, I'm striving continually. I'm bringing you with me if you're not currently with me. But at a certain point, you're mad at me because you can't do it. So, well, how do you win as a woman, you know?
And a lot of us don't think about going outside the culture just to deal with other people because, you know, for some strange reason, people think that, you know, when you do that, you're selling out. But nobody questions these brothers. That's what I'm saying. Like, I know, like, people like Tyra Banks. Come on, like, this woman was single for such a long time, but then she was like a little closet, little freak on the side, but I'm just saying, allegedly. But I'm just saying, like, she winds up getting with some guy. I don't even know if he's African-American. I'm still trying to figure him out. But people like her, people like, you know, people that are out here that are really, really trying to do something for themselves. Like, you ladies saying that you're single. There's no reason for women so intelligent, so beautiful, so talented, to not have a helpmate to, you know, to give them that extra push. When I look at people like Beyonce and Jay-Z, I'm like, okay, are they the new Ashford and Simpson?
You know, honey, but you know what? She has shortened her list of must-haves, and that might be something you hit on that has to be done. You know, sometimes our list is a bit too long. We got standards we don't even meet. So I agree with that, you know. I lived in Atlanta for a short time, and I used to always joke that, you know, the regular women don't have a chance because the executives are going after the truck drivers. Mm. But you're right. Just, you know, it's a combination of several factors. I currently live in Virginia. There's a high population of interracial relationships, and what I hear from the kids is that, I mean, these are high school kids. The black girls bring too much drama. So what is that? You know what I mean? They'd rather deal with somebody that's not going to question them, not going to challenge them, that's going to be happy. I mean, why can't we be happy without drama and make a black man feel comfortable and secure? I don't know. I still haven't figured that out. But this is coming from the youth. So, you know, go figure.
Well, if the youth are thinking like that, then I think the culture is doomed. Because when you look at the media promoting, you rarely see programs where there's a happy black couple. Like, I was watching Tyler Perry's show just yesterday, and I was amazed at how, at even with the buffoonery, but there's an underlying message. Those couples are married. Everyone's together. It's a family, no matter how dysfunctional. It's a family, and we need to see more of that because it exists. Families exist. It's just that they're not being promoted enough. So programming has to change, and also families and women that are raising their sons have to treat their sons a little better, I think. So that, you know, treat their sons a little better so that their sons won't think that all black women are the same. You know what I mean? Because I actually noticed one of my twins, I have a boy and a girl, and my son goes to predominantly all Caucasian school here, Fordham Prep in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. And I was upset when he told me that he liked some girl he met on a cruise. Their father and them went on, and I was like, "Where's this girl from?" And he said she was from Orangetown or Middletown, somewhere in New Jersey. And I was like, "Hold up." I was like, hold up. Okay. I know there's nobody looking like me over there. Okay. And I was like, okay, I can see my son now trying to get on the train to go visit this girl. And I'll read about him in the paper being found somewhere. I was like, oh, no. Because although that I believe that you should stick with your own and all of that and all this, I know what it's like to be in an interracial relationship, and society is still not able to deal with that. And if you don't have a crew behind you, you will get beat up somewhere. You will be found somewhere. Don't forget who you are. And I was saying to myself, why is he attracted to this girl? What was it about this girl that was so special? But then I realized that men have more options than we do.
Exactly.
They take advantage of those options. It's not that she was so special. They take advantage of their options, and their standards are not as high as ours.
Don't forget, they love us too now. We
no
have
doubt.
Mass appeal, and that is why hip-hop is still alive. And that is why every commercial that has a jingle, like you, Victory, you had to do the hip-hop flavor. They want our stuff, but they don't want to live next to us. It's still the same thing, just like society hasn't changed.
You know, I wrote a poem called Women Kissed by the Sun, and in it I mention exactly, like in so many words, I'm saying, like, you want to be us but not see us. You know, it's
right,
our lips, you want our body, you want our men, you want our booty. You know what I mean? You want to go you want to adopt our children. You know, but you won't help a woman that needs help raising her child if her man's not around, or if he's at war somewhere, or if he's in jail somewhere. You don't want to give her help her, but you want to take the child from her and put it in a family that don't even look like that child. It's crazy. We have to protect ourselves. I'm telling you, we have to arm ourselves. And every time I speak to women about being single, it just bothers me that we are going to have a nation of unprotected children, and our culture is going to be watered down, and we are not going to be the authors of our own stories. I'm telling you, if we don't put our feet down and command the respect in our platform, and for people to respect our queendom, we're going to be in trouble. And ladies, it's been so great talking to you. We have to end this conversation, because the show is going to be off in 2 minutes. But I'm glad that both of you called in.
I'm on the roll now, girl.
I want you guys to call in next Thursday, and always call in. I'm on air every Thursday at 6:30, God willing.
Okay, well, we'll be in touch, definitely.
And I will. I have your numbers, and I will talk to you, and I will play your music, Yvette, as we end the show. I want to thank you. And you have a blessed day.
Thank you.
God bless you both.
Thank you.
So happy, baby.